to help these families stay here on a permanent basis. There are already bills in Congress introduced by Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, and Congressman Carlos Cobello that could help these families gain permanent residency. But they do need the time for these bills to go through Congress. We're asking the Trump administration to reconsider, because this his decision, his arbitrary decision to terminate TPS at a time when Haiti is still in turmoil, is throwing all these families in complete disarray. It is in the best interest of the U.S. and Haiti for these families to remain. President Trump did promise to be Haitian's best champions, and this is not the way to show that he is our champion, to keep his promise. Many families will spend a somber Thanksgiving tomorrow, because instead of spending happy times with their families, being grateful, they have to think about deportations. Two TPS recipients who spoke at our press briefing yesterday discuss how depressed they are, how one of them was admitted recently in the emergency room, diagnosed with anxiety disorder. So we hope that the Trump administration will reconsider, will continue temporary protected status. When you look at the conditions of Haiti today, Haiti is a textbook case for TPS. Every indicator prove that Haiti qualifies for continuation.
Marlene Bastien, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Executive Director of FAM, Haitian Women of Miami. That does it for our show. Tune into our specials Thursday and Friday. On Thursday, we remember blacklisted lyricist Yip Harburg. On Friday, we feature interviews with the founder of the Me Too campaign, Tarana Burke, as well as Carmen Yulene Cruz, the San Juan mayor. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Farron. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2017 Iconic Music Party, Thursday, November 30th at 8 p.m. at the 6 West Lounge in Vancouver, Washington. Performing at this year's Iconic Music Party will be the True Original Beings, C4 The Prodigy, MC Groan, Mike Crenshaw, Caleb Wildcard, and Ivan Jamel. There will also be EDM and hip-hop DJs at the 21 and Over event. Again, that's the 2017 Iconic Music Party on Thursday, November 30th, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. at 6 West Lounge, 606 Broadway Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland.
Well, the cowboy came from with his snakeskin boots and his bulletproof vest, gang of goons and his big war chest. Fortunate son, he was doubly blessed. Corporate cronies and the chiefs of staff bowing to the image of the golden calf. Starting up wars in the name of God's son, gonna blow us all the way to kingdom come. Man of God, man of God, that ain't the teachings of a man of God. Man of God, man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man. politicians and the fundamentalists. You never have to tell them how the money's spent. You never have to tell them where their freedom went. Homophobes in the high command, waiting for the rapture like it's Disneyland. Hide all the bodies from out of view. Channel all the treasure to the chosen few.
Good morning. Here we are again. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. Thank you, Eliza Gilkison. For some reason, that song just seems to sum up a lot of what's going on right now, which we'll be talking about. Somehow, in between the air room and the studio right next door, I misplaced the case for that, so I can't tell you what album that came from, but not so important. Man of God, Eliza Gilkison. You've probably heard, we've been hearing a lot about this Roy Moore character. And I don't know, this isn't like a major piece of news, but it struck me that, there's all these pastors from Alabama and elsewhere who continue to stick by Roy Moore for their partisan or whatever interests. And one of them, Flip Benham, who appeared alongside with other anti-abortion advocates at a press conference with Moore last week, suggested on Monday on an Alabama radio show that there was nothing wrong with dating younger women. Well, I mean, it depends how much younger, it depends what you actually do. It depends on a number of things. But anyway, saying that Moore never did so without their parents' permission. The lady that he's married to now, Mrs. Kayla, is a younger woman. He did that because there is something about a purity of a young woman. There is something that is good, that's true, that's straight. And he looked for that. The perversity of that statement. probably doesn't need any commentary, but the use of the term purity really got me. And the fact that Thanksgiving is coming up, and the Puritans, which I think I've talked about a little bit on this program, all those together kind of really got me thinking, and sort of some of the themes I've been pursuing over the years here. So anyway, just to, the term Puritan doesn't actually refer to strict morality. That's not what it originally did, although one could say that their morality was very antithetical to certain expressions, wayward in their views, expressions, namely by the native peoples who they encountered, who were under a lot, often considered under a demonic influence or not fully human, and certainly not a people of God, the elect, as they were. What Puritan really referred to originally was them seeking to purify the Church of England from its Catholic practices, maintaining that the Church of England was only partially reformed after the Reformation. This gets into some really, really thorny stuff, difficult to discuss in this format. But one of the points I want to make here is that the Puritans were blocked from changing the established church from within and were severely restricted in England by laws controlling the practice of religion. So for many reasons, tried to establish some sort of a utopian paradise in their twisted vision here in America, or what came to be known as America, or I guess may have been known already as America at that time. And anyway, this whole idea of basically of missionarianism, the idea of, you know, you can't change the institutions that you feel are corrupted, and so you try to change other people or go somewhere new to create something new. And that's a dynamic that is foundational to the United States, the whole missionary impulse, and I would assert continues to be a driving force. And it's both, you know, in its, you know, I guess you could call it a sincere impulse on some people's part. Although when you get into the twisted psychologies that we're dealing with, what is sincere and what's not is a difficult question to parse out. And I'm not separating myself from any of this stuff too. We're all caught up in this. Anyway, I think the missionary impulses often can be seen in many forms of activism, in terms of trying to transform, we want to change the institutions we want to change, but sometimes we're not really willing to look deeply at our own need for transformation, which then can sort of get reified or exaggerated into this idea that, you know, only start with yourself. You can't change anything else, which becomes its own obstacle that we have to confront. So the whole impulse towards, obviously the, you know, coming here, one of the first things that they, you know, started to do was engage in missionary activity with the native peoples. And again, it goes beyond just this inability to, you know, change European churches and institutions, which was partially what drove the Puritans all the way across the sea. And they also were, you know, allied to commercial forces of their time against, you know, the the remaining feudal system. So again, it's a very complex story. But so there, the whole connection between Protestantism and capitalism, as Max Weber talked about the Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism, all these things get entwined and are enshrined, in fact, in the U.S. Constitution, kind of with the supremacy of commerce. But getting back to the original point, which is this missionary activity, the missionary impulse towards looking outwards instead of being able to do the difficult work of changing, again, staying perhaps in England and fighting out like, you know, a lot of people did. There's the diggers. There is various movements against to try to stop the, against the power of the aristocracy and the nobility and to give power to the people and the commons, you know, the Luddite rebellion against the enclosures and the beginning reign of industrial powers. There's various movements, but the tendency to sort of flee and seek this utopian paradise somewhere else, and then you just end up recreating the same conditions, I think, is an important thing to consider. So I've opened up a whole can of worms. I also want to talk about the film Dr. Strangelove. The term purity sort of got me thinking about the General Jack D. Ripper, whose obsessions with a purity of essence was a key part of that movie. He thought that the Soviet Union was contaminating the United States' precious bodily fluids with fluoridation, leaving aside the whole question of fluoridation, of course, here. But the paranoid style of in the United States, this obsession with these dark plots, which seems to be just growing ever more extensive and ever more strange and disastrous with the internet, because there's more and more dark corners for people to hide in and brood over these plots. Like I just heard a thing on Reveal last night on another public airwave about the Pizzagate and how that just made the rounds of Twitter and Facebook and elsewhere, like so many things during this last election, and that are just exploding now. And of course, with the Russia scandals, again, this whole strange Cold War mentality that keeps mutating, which of course, again, goes way back to this battle between good and evil, going back to the again, the Puritans, who we're talking about because of Thanksgiving, and talking about the pastor Roy Moore, who now Trump is defending. Hey, so did you follow all that? If you did, congratulations. So hang with me if you're at all on my wavelength. Oh, another thing I wanted to say is this whole idea of getting on the same page. I've been talking on the show some about how we can sort of have a collective conversation with kind of me in the cockpit, of course, here, but a guided collective conversation in these dire times so we can actually have some kind of common understanding about this collective insanity that we're living through. So on the same page, anybody know where that started? You can call me up if you think you do at 503-231-8187, or to take up one of the many threads that I've started here at almost 8:20 already. So here we are in Portland, Oregon. I'm in Portland, Oregon. Where are you? Give me a call. Let's hear some people outside of the Portland area. You can be in our listening area out there in the Columbia River Gorge or down in the Mid-Willamette Valley, or you could be on the internet. You can pick up your phone and call 503-231-8187. So, on the same page, I'll tell you what it means. Okay, we got our, my engineer Liam asked if it comes from theater. Actually, it comes from a Bible study or singing together in church. So you have to, you know, the hymnal, you have to get on the same page so you can all sing together. That's where it comes from. So it's interesting that we use that so extensively as sort of this, it's a really common metaphor for, you know, get together so we understand together and we can move together. I was always somewhat critical of the use of that phrase because I think that there's this, we don't really tend to try very hard to get to a deep level of common understanding because we're all so individualized and superficialized by this mass culture that we live in, and we're all also kind of distracted. We've got so many things to pay attention to. We don't really live together unless you happen to live in a group house or one of the few communal situations that there are. So we don't really get to have we don't grow up together. So we don't really get on the same wavelength. So looks like we got our first caller, Paul. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Very interesting topic, the Puritans, in the context of puritanical, whatever that means today. One aspect you didn't mention more in contemporary life is the aspect of greed. And I see so much of this business today motivated by greed. I don't think the Puritans were particularly greedy.
Well, what is greed?
Well, it's having all the toys before you die, kind of thing.
Well, where do you think
I don't know, the Koch brothers.
Where do you think it comes from?
Are you there?
Yeah. Where do you think it comes from? This greed.
Maybe it's a survival instinct. I don't know. I just can't conceive of the kind of greed I see manifested.
Survive, you don't need to have that much to survive. So could it be actually a survival instinct?
I'm just speculating.
Okay.
I don't know. I hadn't thought about it that deeply because I've never been in a position to have. I'm in a position in life where I'm comfortable, but I certainly don't consider myself wealthy. I consider myself reasonably well off, and that's fine.
Well, yeah, I think it's something to think about because I think people do put that out there as a driving force for what's going on. But I think we need to, as the postmodernists say, interrogate these terms that we use because, you know, it's important to understand what the actual deeper motivating forces might be.
It also seems to me that this greed aspect has diverted itself from mainstream religion. I see a lot of mainstream religion, which I guess are the inheritors from the Puritans. Mainstream religion doesn't appear to me to be particularly greedy, except maybe extreme evangelicals and so on.
Well, actually, that's interesting because part of, you know, what drove the Protestant Reformation was actually, you know, you could call it greed, you could call it power, you could call it corruption, was the way the Catholic, the priesthood, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church was basically enriching itself to the detriment of the peasantry and, you know, the people of as a whole. So that was one of the forces that drove the Protestant Reformation. So there, you know, I mean, this is, look at the nobility has always, you know, there's always been, good kings and bad kings, but, you know, they enriched themselves. Basically, they lived on the backs of, you know, the people, And so you can call it greed, but let me give you what I think, since you asked. I think that, which is actually what I really wanted to talk about this show, which is the concept of a missing type of culture that keeps greed, these impulses, that keeps them in check, that actually that there might be a tendency to on the part of some to accumulate more than they actually need to the detriment of the people as a whole. But in some social groups, like hunter-gatherer groups, certain small village societies, there's actual social relationships that keep those tendencies in check. So yeah, there might be those, that might be a universal human tendency, but it isn't able to get expressed in some social situations, which I think initially sort of the idea of communism was an attempt to do that, to substitute on a large level for what those smaller groups did. Unfortunately, it ended up just sort of replicating in different ways, because the party functionaries tend to get better access to the goods and all that. But yeah, so I tend not to look at, greed itself. I tend to look at the social conditions that allow these tendencies to get more than your fair share to express themselves.
Well, I always think of Eric Hofer's precept that all causes begin with a movement. And you can ascribe this to religion. You can, right now, I ascribe it to institutional education. Begin with a movement. The movement becomes a business. The business eventually becomes a racket. And I see this over and over again in our society, talking about churches and so on. But again, I want to emphasize that I don't think the mainstream churches necessarily are so greedy anymore, and I think they're the inheritors of the Puritan, whatever, legacy, I guess you'd say. I'm going to hang it up and let somebody else talk. I do appreciate your topic, though. It's very worthwhile.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, well, let's go to our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I really appreciate you bringing up, to start out, the fact that there are other cultures, and so that have a different mentality. Instead of an individualist mentality, they have a community-based mentality. I was just reading about the Okanagan, who believe that you aren't actually fully human unless you take care of your community and your family first before yourself, because without that, how can you survive, right? So on that note, like, I don't think that greed is necessarily a nature thing. I think especially coming from feudalism into a capitalist system, the individualism has been taught to us. Because, I mean, look at the basis of capitalism, right? That we are rational actors acting on in our own self-interest. But that is entirely based on a lie, because we aren't rational beings. We're completely irrational. If you look at any behavioral economics teachings, we're completely irrational, and we have social constructs and societal implications for our actions, right?
Well, I would give you a quick caveat and let you go on in a second, but I think just the binary distinction between rational and irrational might be the problem, rather than stating that we're irrational. But that's go ahead.
Okay, true. Okay, let me give a little more nuance on that. Is that we make rational decisions within our understanding of the situation, right? But we don't have the full information, so therefore we can't be fully rational making the best decision possible. We're making the best decision possible with the information that we have, but that still leaves a lot of nuance that's necessary to understand why people do things, as opposed to what Adam Smith in a very capitalist system leads us to believe, which gives us a very simple BS answer to a very complex situation. And so I believe that society nowadays really looks at these like basic teachings of capitalism. And then, you look at the insertion of In God We Trust, and how the capitalists in the 50s made capitalism and Christianity synonymous. And now you've got an entire, it's a theology of capitalism. It's not just a market system. you know what I mean, as opposed to Marxism or socialism or communism. So
what the heck do we do about it?
Education is obviously a really important part of that, but making it explicit of how this system is hurting us and how it's dividing us, right? Because we communicate a lot to each other, but we don't commune. We don't break bread and we don't have conversations with that, right? We don't connect as human beings anymore. We're so
I wouldn't say
so
that,
we have to build community again.
Yeah, I wouldn't say nobody probably does, but yeah, I mean, I think as a general rule, that does tend to be the tendency, and we don't, yeah, because structurally, I mean, that's what I get back to, is structurally, we've got an alienating situation. So how do we begin to break out of it? I mean, like some people, like in the 60s, started these communes, which was an amazing cultural experiment. Of course, it goes way back, the whole communalist thing. But then the problem is that you can't, you still have these dominant forces that we're trapped. We're trapped because, what needs to happen is this whole corrosive system needs to disappear, because whenever we try to create an alternative to it, it gets re-enveloped in the thing. So, and then we never have enough time. We're so isolated and alienated, we aren't able to get the kind of traction the communist and anti-colonial movements and revolutions did or attempted to do. We seem to get, as this process goes along, we seem to get further and further away from the actual possibility of gaining any influence over it. And then, the attempts to subtract ourselves from it seem to be increasingly irrelevant because of its power. But I'm painting a very bleak picture, aren't I?
But it's really hard not to, because, the reality of it is that we're in late-term capitalism. We've been pushed as a society as far apart as we possibly can. A lot of us do try and create our own communities and have friends and family that, we care about and that we take care of. But I think what we can do, and I think what I'm really hopeful for, because I'm an environmental studies major, and so I look at the fact that we really don't have time to deal with capitalism. Like, we just have to get rid of it. Otherwise, there's the potential the entire planet dies within the next 100 years.
The next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah. Our species could be gone. And I'm talking about like the entire Earth, because if we don't do anything about it, there's the potential between the amount of greenhouse gases and some other processes that, it could be like a Mars event, but that's neither here nor there with
Venus. I think you're referring to Venus, actually. Yeah.
Sorry, what?
I think Venus is actually the dangerous model there's theories that a runaway greenhouse scenario created the conditions on Venus, which is extremely hot and untenable for any kind of life forms, let alone the kind of very complex, advanced like mammals, and especially advanced social like Homo sapiens. So yeah, no, it's a. I'm glad you took us in that direction, because that's what motivates me. I'm in the same place, and I feel like there is no time, and there really hasn't been any time for a long time. But we still live in this sort of bubble of thinking that incrementally we can make these changes. And it just seems like we're living in a big illusion to me.
Oh, indeed. And and that's where I'm hopeful. And that's what keeps me going, is that because of a global impending catastrophe that's already begun, that perhaps, and given that we have social media, like, people talk a lot of crap about social media, but you look at all the campaigns that are going on, the expansive increase in consciousness around the globe around the very same issues and the ability of people to organize around these issues. There's the potential for recreating community through that, and possibly breaking down the structure, hopefully soon. You know, I mean, that's really the reality, is we either do it or we don't.
Fair enough. Hey, listen, I think we've got a bunch of other callers.
Yeah. Let them talk. Thanks for letting me be on.
Okay. Thank you for being on. Let's just go right to our next caller. Is this Tim? Hello? Oh, we lost you. There, I told our last caller, who was saying some very interesting things.
Hi,
hello.
I'm George, and I had a remark and a question or two.
Go ahead.
Oh, is that you, Paul?
Well, it's my show. Who else would it be?
Okay, thanks. My hearing isn't too good. I didn't. I think the remark of the last caller about the Okanagan community and the last caller's awareness that there's something about community that we aren't getting to, and I wonder, and your remarks right on the, it seems to me, on the points of our maybe systemically dictated separation or failure to get community isn't just simple failure, it's the perpetual labyrinth of capital. And I began to think a few years ago, or not too long ago, that the efforts to build some kind of socialist society, we often talk about them as failures, but they were in part failures, and in part there were some successful aspects of them. I don't know if that's something that sounds reasonable.
Well, my view is that mass it doesn't work on a mass level. I think that's what's been demonstrated. The kind of mechanisms that I was talking about for checks and balances on whether it's greed or male abusive behavior or whatever it might be, really work at small scale levels. Although I must say the caveat that this wave of calling out of abusive male behavior, it does seem to be at least mimicking, if not actually taking the place of the kind of peer pressure that comes to bear in the kind of societies that we're talking about. Those are the mechanisms. Those are the checks and balances. That's one of the kind of checks and balances that I was referring to. Mm-hmm. And so when I think that's all to the good. I don't think that we can stay in this kind of mass society which allows such rampant abuse of people, other animals, and ecosystems. I don't think it's possible for it to continue and life to thrive, but I think it's a very amazing thing that's happening, and I personally think that it's sort of, for me, it feels like it confirms this sort of theory I have about the need to reestablish these kind of intimate sort of social mechanisms is kind of a bad word, but forms of checks and balances. I feel like that's what's happening, and that we need to take it much further.
I have a question about it at this point. Cuba has gone through some of the pains of having a leader who had a good deal of success, Fidel Castro, in a number of ways, and then I don't know, but I think after the collapse of the Soviet and its satellite systems in the 1991, 1992, 1993, Cuba went through a crisis. But I, from what I've read about, anyway, it looks like Cuba developed, and Castro began to wake up on this, and apparently other people, that Cuba needed to develop very strong grassroots neighborhood-based sort of, I guess, grassroots democratic processes that would not go away. And my impression is that gradually this began to happen, but I don't know what you've heard about this or what.
Well, I saw a really amazing video about basically when the oil from the Soviet Union basically got cut off and they were forced to make do with other and there was a really kind of utopian video. I can't remember the name of it, which in very glowing terms and it seemed to be true. And that's, you know, that's because they were forced on their own devices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Cuba's a really amazing example. I think there's, you know, obviously contradictions and distortions and perversions as there are in it's also still a fairly large scale society. But yeah, I think it was tending in that direction for sure. And I think, you know, my talk of my interview with the people from the Montevilla Neighborhood Association, my mm-hmm. talk about how we need to go local in a much more interesting and I would say radical and innovative ways, I agree. I think socialism from the ground up has been sort of a rallying cry of many, you know, from, you know, in some ways the 1968 rebellions, both within and without, within the Western world and within the Soviet bloc countries, the attempt to, you know, the flowering of the resistance to the Soviet machine, mm-hmm. All these things. I think that's a human tendency that is continually thwarted and crushed that we need to continue to hold on to. So thank you for calling, George.
Okay, you bet. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I think we still have some other oh, darn. I thought we had other callers. I guess they got tired and left. Anyway, it's a 503-231-8187. Please give me a call and let me know what you're thinking about on these issues. So I got this phrase that I've been rattling around with in my mind. I've never really talked about it here on this show. A missing foundation, that we have a missing foundation, which is exactly this form of society, you know, the dream of some of these socialist states was to create, you know, the new human being through these mass institutions, which again, I think it was proved erroneous. And then of course, you know, what's pointed to by those who try to discredit any idea of going against the capitalist hegemony, you know, the Pol Pot example in Cambodia, where you just take all the bureaucrats and the supposedly corrupt classes in the society, and you either liquidate them or you take them to work re-education camps. Appealing as the idea might be of, you know, taking some of these narcissistic, sociopathic politicians and CEOs, the movers and shakers, the Zuckerbergs and the Google and the Koch brothers and the Trumps and the rest, and you know, put them to actual work, you know, force them to actually do a real service to people instead of being vampires and living off. Much as that is appealing, you know, I certainly don't have the power, and I don't think I really want to get the power into force. So I don't know what how do we come to the point where we can actually rein in? Again, I think this is a fine example of women coming out and calling out, and for some reason it's actually gaining traction now, maybe because exactly of the direness of the situation that we're all feeling either consciously or unconsciously. But anyway, we've got 15 minutes left. I want to let you know what's coming up here on KBOO. At 9 o'clock on Political Perspectives, Linda Olson Osterlin welcomes Andrea, I guess, Williams from Causa to discuss deportation, ICE raids, DACA, and Oregon driver's license. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, the Recovery Zone talks to solar energy specialist Jesse Hunter, who wants to dethrone King Kong, that's C-O-N-G, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. And, of course, KBOO is always here to help keep you informed and hopefully connected and in perhaps a little more enthusiastic in the face of what's going on. So you can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. I'll also encourage you to go to the bottom of the page and click on Volunteer. I myself am looking for volunteers. I'd like to include more people in the making and airing of this program. I have a sometimes a co-host guest, Jacqueline Keeler, to provide other perspectives. If you're interested in, you know, joining me or some of the other programs or doing a lot of the other work, we need engineers like Liam is doing right now for me. Thank you, Liam. We need people doing, helping with the engineering, all kinds of stuff. It's a interesting place to get involved if you have some time, if you can make some time. Again, go to kboo.fm, check out volunteering, and join us in this. To me, what this is an attempt to use the alienating forms of technology and socialization to eventually do away with the need for them. Or, you know, I think there's always going to be a place for radio. It's just that if you look across the dial, I don't know if people listen to radio a lot. I certainly listen to probably too much, but it's really disastrous. I mean, what we could be doing collectively with our energies, on all these different wavelengths, we're just squandering everything. We're squandering all this amazing fossil fuels developed over millions of years. We're squandering all our precious energies because of the vast exploitation. We're squandering all these airwaves and, as Liam said, our precious bodily fluids, yes. Anyway, so, but this is one place where we actually, you can actually help determine what goes out. You know, if you don't like what I'm hearing, or you want to, you know, take it in a different direction or add to what I'm doing, you can get involved and by calling in. And I believe we have Karen who's called in and wants to talk with us. Hello. 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 Hello.
My name is Terry.
Oh, Terry, I'm sorry. I got your name wrong.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I wanted your listeners to be aware. Thank you, Paul, for all the excellent programs that you put out and the history lesson. Thank you. I wanted your listeners to be aware of an African tradition called Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U. It's also a computer program. There's different ways of looking at it. But this one by Michael Tellinger is Ubuntu Contributionism. And the idea is that we disarm the banks, but we would have to let go of property, and we would share, each to their own contribution. And it was just, when I read it, it gave me hope that there's, I don't know, it just, because each area of the, education, all the different things that you could think about, he's addressed it in this book.
And the book is called, what's
Ubuntu, yeah? U-B-U-N-T-U, Contributionism.
Uh-huh.
It's by Michael Tellinger, T-E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. Now, it's published in South Africa. It isn't published here yet. So it's hard. You can get it on Amazon. And once he goes around the world promoting the book. He was here last spring, is how I got wind of it.
Mm-hmm.
On Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero.
God, I can't stand that. I can't stand that show, although he does occasionally have a decent guest on there, strangely enough.
Oh.
No, well, I mean, he's a climate change denier, for one thing.
Or some of the topics are, but some of it's really interesting. You never know what he's going to talk about is what the problem is. But other than that, this book is really interesting. We would have to let go of our property, though. We would have to share, more like a community, working together for the common good of everybody. And it sounds like it. It's a utopia.
But let me ask you a question. So has he and his colleagues taken it in particular practical directions in South Africa?
No, not that I know of. Uh-huh. Not that I know of. He just put the book out there. I don't know that much about... He did run for office, I heard, in South Africa, but he's a white man, so they would probably prefer black men or women to rule, after all the other whatever they went through, apartheid and everything. But
well, it doesn't sound like he wants to rule, but anyway, we don't really know much about the whole context, is what you're saying. Well, that's really interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that because, I have a Free Geek computer and it has that Ubuntu
software. Well, there's different books. I got another one by Stephen London and Bob Nelson. It tells how they made it work in a business, the tradition. It's an African tradition, but this Michael Tellinger book goes into all facets of society and how we could change it. It really seems well thought out.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate
and,
that.
And it would answer the greed question that you had for Thanksgiving. It would answer it that way.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of, actually the greed in the context of Thanksgiving, because supposedly Thanksgiving is a time of sharing, although, of course, the idea that the colonists really were interested in sharing with the Native Americans should have been thoroughly debunked.
Yes,
but that's interesting. That's very apropos of the time of year. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'll look into that.
Thank you, Paul.
And thank you, Terry. And looks like we've got another caller. Go ahead.
Yeah. How are you? This is Ben. And listen, I think she's lovely and. And I think Ubuntu is a good idea if everyone's ethical. That would be great if we could practice ethics as a society and also possibly have better attitudes. I mean, everyone's pissed off. It's not going to help anything. So when you wake up and you're breathing in the morning, one idea is to just, figure out how to be in a good mood and not be depressed. If you have a medical challenge because you don't have medical insurance, perhaps, really focus 15, 20 minutes on that every day until that's solved and solve the problems as they go. Now, I'm not saying everyone can do that. People need help. But I just wanted... That's worse than religion.
Oh, we lost you completely. I thought my headphones had gone blank, so I quickly got another pair. But actually, you had just blacked out there for about 20 seconds, so we missed what
you're saying. Are you freaking kidding me? Okay. All right. Well, no problem, man. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling in. And I guess we got your main point there. How do we deal with people without ethics? I think we're all ethically challenged in this society because we can't be ethical when just about, every purchase we make is contributing to the continual death of our ecosystems. But I think, again, this whole wave of calling out of perhaps some of the more ethically challenged people, people can be respectful of women and continue to rampantly exploit everything else. So we have a long ways to go, but I think the model of, you know, since we've got all this social media and stuff, using it to, in some ways, replicate, as I said, this kind of checks and balances of traditional culture, as my guest host, Jacqueline Keeler talks about kinship culture as opposed to mass culture, is that's the kind of missing foundation. And the idea of, you know, getting together with our families at Thanksgiving sort of is this sort of pale remnant, this sort of atavistic vestige of the fullness of kinship culture, you know, the nuclear family. We sort of hang on to this last thread, you know, and then of course all the discussion that people have about, you know, how do we get along at the family dinner table at Thanksgiving, because, you know, the split of generations, because, you know, each generation is raised, with completely different popular culture influences, some ways different ethical influences. You know, there seems to be some hope for the newer generations that are less raised in the gender binary and racial binary, or, you know, rigid racial classifications of the older folks. Hopefully that will continue to bear some fruit. But we need to go deeper. We need to recreate this missing foundation of close-knit social groups that can resist the devastating corrosive influence of mass society, capitalist society, empire, colonial society, a big task. Many generations, the small minorities of many generations have tried, and we continue. I'm trying to do my tiny little part here. We're about 3 minutes to go. I guess we won't have time for any more callers unless someone wants to slip in real quick at 503-231-8187. This is my attempt to have this sort of continuing conversation on this cluster of issues around mass society, this missing foundation, the idea that basically everything we're doing, including me talking on the radio here, is a substitute for something fundamental that we have lost, and that we often try to get back in ways that aren't very effective or productive. We seem to be still trapped in the sort of progressivist, incrementalist view of social change, that somehow things can get better continuing to use the same strategies and methods of the past, at a time when the capacity for large-scale social rupture, which may have been true at one point, you know, when we had the factory system where people were all corralled into these neighborhood, working class neighborhoods, and, you know, had some working class solidarity, all that seems to be disappearing. What are the forms that it can take? What are the forms that it is taking? Some of the things we've been talking about here today, here on a Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, yours truly, Paul Rowland, been talking about the Puritans, this pastor who is supporting Roy Moore, along with our groper in chief, Donald Trump. Anyway, I guess we can go out now with some messages from the station, since I don't have a whole lot more to talk about here. Maybe we can go out with this song that I had queued up from Quicksilver Messenger Service.
In the dust. morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning for the remainder of the morning until noon. Right off, we have political perspectives. Today, Linda Olsen-Osterlund welcomes Andrea Williams from CAUSA to discuss deportations, ICE raids, DACA, and Oregon driver's licenses. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, and then at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, the Recovery Zone talks to solar energy specialist Jesse Hunter, who wants to dethrone King Kong, that's C-O-N-G, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. And please let us remind you that KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved when you go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. You can become a member there, and we appreciate it. And let's listen to a couple of announcements, or just one announcement, before we get to political perspectives with Linda and her guest,